Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation. It's the great debate, but it can only be a debate, of course, if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls on 44208-601-4555. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line, and if you got on the television with me, make sure the volume on your TV is at zero, or no one will understand either of us. You can also SMS the show on 4478-0008066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. Now, the European Union is in the middle of a serious crisis on attitudes towards the Syrian conflict. Germany wants to support and continue the arms embargo imposed for 3 months by the European Union in January. France, on the other hand, has declared that it wants to begin arming the rebels, including, of course, in their ranks, Al-Qaeda. Britain is following suit, following the French, just like they did in Mali, a kind of tail to the French poodle. And this is going to cause serious problems because, as the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov, visiting London this week, made clear to the British government, it is simply illegal to supply weapons to non-government actors. And actors they are, in a drama of throat-cutting, hand-chopping, sectarian mass murder. That's not to say, as I keep repeating here, that one is against the right of the Syrian people to demand democratic change in their country and even to rise up in order to obtain democratic change in their country. But when it comes to Britain and France, the United States, Israel, Saudi Arabia and Qatar flooding a very complex and very sensitively placed country with more and more heavy weaponry, you can include me out, especially when the platform of the so-called rebels appears to bear little more than mere sectarian hatred. Israel, meanwhile, has deported hundreds of Africans. They were the wrong colour, apparently. Only white South Africans are welcome in Israel. Hundreds of Eritreans and Sudanese have been deported. Thousands are in the dungeons of Israel for no other reason than that they are black African refugees, and Israel's supporters still deny that it is the apartheid state. And what about Prince Charles? He drove past Palestinian refugee camps where the refugees have rotted for 58 years in one case. He drove right past a camp where there are tens of thousands of Palestinian refugees for 58 years. He drove past them to visit some newer refugees who'd been there in Jordan for only a matter of weeks. What's the difference? Well, one lot were Palestinian refugees and the others were Syrian. Why is his royal blundering around in the sensitive politics of the Middle East with the Union Jack upon his motor car? He and his Duchess were roaming around explicitly intervening in a very, very controversial political area. I don't think that's a good thing in a democracy. But if he's going to visit refugees in Jordan, well, the Palestinian refugees have been there rather longer. My first caller is on the line. He's not been long with us, but in the times that he's been on, he's been an absolute star. He's Gary in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, that is. He wants to talk about Israel and Syria. Gary, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Good evening, George. Good to be back here.
Welcome. Go ahead. What do you think?
Well, first of all, this question of Syria. The hand of the United States is just everywhere. But the only thing that's happening in the present circumstances is that it's not politic for a variety of reasons and a variety of things that's happened to the United States' place in the world in the Middle East. It's not politic for them to be seen front and center. pushing these terrorist gangs.
Yeah. Not least because of the Al-Qaeda, the flicker of Al-Qaeda, as was described by the State Department a year ago, which has now become a big flame. The United States is sensitive about giving weapons to Al-Qaeda. After all, Al-Qaeda murdered thousands of American citizens just over a decade ago. But it's impossible to believe, Gary, isn't it, that France and Britain intend to arm these people with the without the support of the United States behind the scenes.
That's exactly the point. And the outcome for both countries, for both Britain and France, will not be pretty. They will pay a very big price in the domestic polity of both countries for this absolutely crazed approach to matters in Syria. The Syrian people, as you have pointed out, as I also know, are a metropolitan people. They do not live for sectarian warfare and slaughter and any of this.
No. Neither is Syria Saudi Arabia, and it's definitely not Afghanistan. It's not a country, a society, a metropolitan, sophisticated, Levantine Mediterranean society that's going to tolerate Al-Qaeda-type interpretations of Islam ruling over them. So we're guaranteed civil war and bloodshed for decades if these people were to win with the assistance of Western arms paid for by U.S. satrapies in the Persian Gulf who have no armies of their own worth speaking of, but have got lots of money to buy mercenaries.
Well, I think if Zionism were not in the picture, the U.S. does a lot of things in that region, confident that there's always the state of Zionism of Israel to pick up the pieces for them. This is another factor that is becoming more and more challenged.
Indeed, it is. Gary, thanks very much for that call. Kicking us off, let's go from Canada to Iran. Mohammed is on the line from Tehran on the same subject. Mohammed, welcome to the show. What would you like to say?
I was about to say about Israel, but I'll change it. George, as you said in RT channel, everything UK and France and especially West in front of the US done after 9/11 has been denied to multiply proliferate terrorism, extremism, fanaticism around the war.
Yes.
And now in Syria, they want to force and make this country and kill the innocent people.
Well, there's more than a million Syrian refugees living in tents as refugees on the Turkish and Jordanian sides of the border, and of course in great profusion in Lebanon. Something like 70,000 plus have lost their lives on all sides. Syria is being broken into pieces, its ancient cities destroyed, the lives of its people, its school children, for example. Many people haven't been able to go to school or university for the best part of 2 years. This is the literal destruction of a country, a nation that we're watching. Just like we watched in slow motion the literal destruction of a country, a nation in Iraq next door just 10 years ago this week. It is one of the great crimes of the century, Mohammed, isn't it? I think we've lost Mohammed in Tehran. He was making the point that the killing is being sponsored by Western countries and paid for by stooge countries that are under the Western orbit. Simon, he's another regular caller, is in what they call South Sudan. He wants to talk about Syria, and it's always a pleasure to disagree with him. Simon, welcome back to the show. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. You know, what is happening in Syria is really boring the world. Because when I see some 3 months ago, Obama was saying he cannot support the Al-Qaeda in Syria. Now these days also they are training of rebels. They are training rebels in Syria.
Yeah.
And this is what is worrying the world. What he said did not even... I myself, I cannot accept that. Because you cannot come and... This one in Syria is like a world war. Everybody is fighting for Syria. Mostly Americans and the Western, let's say, part of Europe. They are all fighting for Syria. They are also they are fighting for the government of Bashar al-Assad. And this is boring the world.
I'm not really following that. It's not a clear enough line. But the reason Simon is calling from something called South Sudan is because the same countries, Western countries and Israel, armed the rebels in what was called South Sudan, or what is now called South Sudan, which happened to have 75% of Sudan's oil. And there was a very clear casus belli. The casus belli was that Western countries and Israel wanted to break up a powerful, potentially powerful and potentially rich Muslim country. And in Syria, the same actors are at work. They're employing the same tactics of fastening on insurgents who want to break up the country. These people who are fighting in the various Al-Qaeda factions in Syria will be quite happy to rule a tiny part of Syria, an emirate of their own. It might only be a few streets. But the Syria that we knew, the great Arab Republic, a great Islamic culture, is probably been broken beyond repair, as has Sudan, where Simon was calling from. Ramzan is on the line. He's in Pakistan, where there are a few problems also. Ramzan, welcome back to the show. Go ahead.
Hi there. Good evening to you, George. How are you?
Very well, by the grace of God. Go ahead, sir.
Right. Okay. Well, basically, my comment is that we are mungling in other people's business again.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. We haven't learned our lessons when we went to Iraq and when we are still in Afghanistan. I mean, in our country, in Britain, I'm here over here on holidays at the moment.
Okay.
And basically, shame that our elderly people are, their homes are being closed, disability is being cut, and yet, basically all our funding in all our different sectors are being cut by our government, and yet we are spending millions and millions of pounds sending arms to the rebels who's going to kill innocent people. Now, where is the motive of our Prime Minister? Are they gone crazy or what?
You know, well, I think this is a really important point you've made, Ramzan, and it's just not being discussed openly enough and often enough in Britain. It's important for international viewers to understand this. Britain is virtually bankrupt. We are now in the third month of the third of the triptych of the triple dip recession. That's a triple dip depression. We have mass unemployment in this country, mass poverty, mass cuts in public services, services being closed down, old people shivering in this long and bitter winter because they have to choose between eating and heating their homes. Hundreds of thousands of people being made redundant, unemployed, thrown onto the economic scrap heap. This is a country that cannot even pay its collective electricity bill. But it can always find money to set fire to other people's countries. On the news tonight, we discover that $2 trillion was spent by the United States destroying Iraq. $2 trillion. Britain spent $20 billion setting fire to Iraq. And yet, almost 80 million people in the United States are dependent on welfare, on food stamps, and on the various parts of the paraphernalia of mass poverty and unemployment. There's something insane about this, Ramzan. that we don't have money for our own people and our own services, but we're handing money and weapons, soon to be weapons, now so-called non-lethal military equipment, as William Hague told the House of Commons, so that these rebels, many of whom are Al-Qaeda affiliates, official, declared, can, quote, move freely, that is, kill freely. There is something insane about this, Ramzan, and the people of Britain have yet to wake up to it. Niall's on the line from Ireland, where politics are a little bit, I say a little bit, more progressive. And he wants to talk about Syria. Niall, welcome back to the show.
Cheers, George.
Great to hear from you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think when you have to look at Syria, you need to look at the wider Middle Eastern issue. And the Romans used to say back in the day, you know, they say, quo bono, who benefits?
Yeah.
And when you actually look at the wider picture, it's not the Syrian people who will benefit, but this is part of a greater geopolitical game in action here in the Middle East. It's part of the great struggle between the Sunnis and the Shia, with the West looking to exploit the divisions and the deep divide within the Islamic world. And it's an absolute tragedy to see Muslims and see Arabs at each other's throats. Because as you know, with our own experience in Ireland, you know, we had the old divide and conquer, you know, just divide the natives and you'll conquer them easily. And this is exactly what is happening in Syria. And, you know, George, there was a very, very tragic incident, what happened 4 weeks ago in Damascus, when the so-called Free Syrian Army, they shelled a football match. And one of those players killed was a Syrian Jew, a member of Syria's small Jewish community. And, you know, when that happened, George, I kind of immediately thought back to when Israel attacked Syrian forces. You know, it was the irony of all ironies. You have the Zionist state next door attacking the secular government in Damascus, trying to keep order and trying to keep these jihadis, these Western-backed Saudi-armed jihadis at bay. And, you know, it's an absolute shame. It's horror to see this going on. And even worse, when you have Britain and France, along with Saudi Arabia, intervening on behalf of these jihadists and dividing up the spoils of war. And also when you look at what's going on in the Golan Heights, when you see the rebels attacking the Syrian army, you have to say, you know, who is benefiting from this? I think Israel is, because this will give Israel a perfect excuse to annex the Golan Heights. Because these guys, you know, Saudi Arabia and Israel, they're playing, they're actually singing from the same hymn sheet.
Well, look, first of all, Niall, they have already annexed the Golan Heights. In fact, long ago when they annexed Jerusalem, they annexed the Golan Heights. But everything else that you said, I agree with. Everything. And we have now the grotesque situation where the so-called Arab League, who knew the Arabs had a league? In football parlance, it's definitely Vauxhall Conference League. That is to say, below the actual real leagues that anyone would recognize, the Arab League is going to supply weapons to the Syrian rebels through the Israeli annexed Golan Heights. They're going to pass through occupied Palestine to give weapons to the Syrian rebels. It really defies belief that the Arabs and the Muslims can be so easily and so utterly confused. Niall, thanks for intervening on that. We are talking about Syria and the arming of the rebels, which the French president has declared he's going to do, and the British government has said that it might well do, although already the British government is giving these rebels money and non-lethal, they say, military equipment. We're also talking about Prince Charles, His Royal Highness Prince Charles, the heir to the British throne, who was visiting Jordan this week and who drove past the Palestinian refugee camps, which have been there for 60 years nearly, in order to visit the Syrian refugees. And there he blundered around looking like an Englishman abroad, him and his Duchess putting their big foolish Wellington boots in very, very troubled waters indeed. Tony's on the line from Spain, wants to talk about Israel and Syria. Tony, welcome to the show, my friend. Go on, Tony.
Hello?
Hello, Tony, are you there? Tony? Well, let me just remind people that if you get on the television with me, the volume on your TV has to be at zero, or we get a fiasco like the one that we have just experienced, where Tony is actually listening to me 3 seconds ago and not on the line as I'd hoped he would be. Nonetheless, there are lots of other callers coming up discussing Israel, Syria, discussing Prince Charles, discussing the deportation of African refugees from Israel. They turned out to be the wrong color of Africans, and so they get banged up in jail and then deported. Thousands are in jail. Hundreds have been deported just in the first 3 months of this year. Tony's back on the line from Spain, we hope. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hello, George. How are you?
Very well. Go ahead, sir. Quickly.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity, because it has been a very good time to speak with you.
Excellent. Go on.
Thank you, George. I just want to talk about the Syria problem. It's really very shameful. The problem of Syria, in fact, is the problem of the entire Arab continent. And in fact, the Saudi Arabia must be held responsible for the unrest in the entire Arab countries. They are responsible because of their selfish interests, and it's very shameful that they are going to arm Syria insurgents. And anyway, when you talk about the Syria insurgents, who are the Syria insurgents? These are the Salafists, the extremists that was bred in Saudi Arabia, and the Al-Qaeda, which their home, they originated from Saudi Arabia. They trained them, they financed them, and they are arming them, so we're not surprised. But doing it under the umbrella of the Arab League is very, very shameful. In fact, this time I have really understand that the Arab League is more or less a social club. It's more or less a social club. It has nothing to offer.
A social club without alcohol, we hope. A social club without belly dancers, we hope. But then, who needs belly dancers when you've got some of the Arab leaders belly dancing for the United States and directly or indirectly for Israel? Saudi Arabia and countries like it are doing this for two reasons, Tony. First of all and foremost, because the United States has told them to, just like it told them to in the 1980s in relation to Afghanistan. But that's not the only reason. One of the reasons is the Saudis want to send the message to their own people that this is where revolution ends. It ends in rivers of blood, in utterly destroyed cities and towns, in destroyed societies, in the dismemberment of the country. And so they hope to say to their people, you better not yourselves go down that road of revolution, because this, Syria, is where it will end up. Tony, we're talking about the Eritreans. I'll tell you about Eritrea after the break. Eritreans and Sudanese being expelled from Israel because they're black African refugees. This from the country that hates the appellation apartheid state. We're talking about Prince Charles and his lady blundering around in their big Wellington boots in the troubled waters of the Middle East, driving past Palestinian refugee camps in order to visit Syrian refugee camps. And we're talking about the UK and Syria. I'll be back, God willing, in just a few minutes. Join me. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. We need your calls, your SMS, and your emails on the subjects we're discussing tonight. The brouhaha in the European Union on whether or not the arms embargo imposed just a month ago by the European Union should be observed by two of the European Union's most important countries. Britain and France are openly canvassing breaking the European Union's arms embargo and arming the Syrian rebels in their insurgency, which has already cost the lives of more than 70,000 people and the destruction of the lives of millions of Syrian people, setting fire to a tinder-dry and extremely combustible part of the world. Wading into that part of the world was Prince Charles and his princess, or duchess, I should say. Very, very troubled waters, even if you're wearing green Wellington boots, as the English ruling class like to do. He drove past Palestinian refugee camps that have been there for more than half a century, millions of them, in order to visit far newer weeks, Syrian refugees in the same country, signalling the British royal family's intervention in the Syrian imbroglio. Very dangerous waters indeed. And we're talking about the apartheid state of Israel's latest deportations of black people, black Africans, refugees from Sudan and from Eritrea. Some people have been emailing asking about Eritrea. Where is Eritrea? What is Eritrea? I know it well. In fact, it's the place I came closest to being bombed to death. I was there with an ITN crew, the legendary Desmond Hamill, the great newsman, and I had our faces pressed into the earth, trying to get ourselves make ourselves a lower target, 25 years ago, as bombs dropped by the Ethiopian Air Force were shattering and spinning the razor-sharp, red-hot steel all around us. Eritrea was a country then fighting for its independence from Ethiopia, from Addis Ababa, and it got it. And it hasn't done very much good with it, I'm sorry to say. And so it has refugees, some of whom end up in Israel, but they're far too black in the face to be allowed to walk the streets of Israel. And they're being incarcerated and then deported. Sudan is another case in point. That's another country where Israel was fueling an insurgency, a civil war, which led to the creation of what's called South Sudan. And Israel and Western countries are still encouraging, financing and arming, sometimes now through Ethiopia, separatist rebellions in various parts of what remains of Sudan after the secession of the south of the country, taking 75% of the country's oil wealth with them. So we're talking about the apartheid state and its attitude to black Africans. Ahmed is in London, wants to talk about the UK and Syria. Ahmed, welcome to the show.
All right. Thank you, Mr. George. I would like to ask you, you said before a few minutes, you said the Arab leaders, their belly dancer to USA. I'm asking you about Mr. Nouri al-Maliki. I am Iraqi. What do you think Nouri al-Maliki is not belly dancer to USA?
Ahmed, let me stop you there, Ahmed, let me stop you there. Nouri al-Maliki was one of only three Arab governments that refused to arm the Syrian rebels. So I'm no fan of the government of Iraq, but on this question, they're adopting an absolutely principled stand that they will not support other countries invading and allowing and facilitating the invasion of their neighbor, Syria. I think that's commendable, don't you?
No, let me ask you, then let me finish my question. Let me ask you, Nouri al-Maliki, you know, when you go to Tehran and you defend Iran politics, when you go to Tehran, you don't take Iraq flag, and you don't dress tight because American...
Slow down, Ahmed. I can't grasp what you're saying, and therefore neither can the viewers. So I know that you're attacking me. Just do it clearly so that I can answer you. Don't speak so fast. Go on.
Okay. I mean the Nouri Maliki, the American officer, they say we have proven evidence. The Iranian airplane, they come to Baghdad, they come to Iraq, and they send weapons to Bashar al-Assad. And Bashar al-Assad, he killed innocent people with Iranian weapons, and you're talking about USA.
Okay, now I've got you. So let me take my glasses off and roll my sleeves up. I opposed the Anglo-American invasion of Iraq and the destruction of Iraq into tiny emirates controlled by gangs like the gangs of New York, and applying sectarian politics in the interests, a kind of national belly dance, in the interests of the invading, occupying colonial powers. I opposed it, and therefore I oppose it in Syria. The difference, I infer, between you and me is that you opposed it in Iraq and support it in Syria. Me, I'm consistent. I'm against sectarianism, whether in Iraq or in Syria or anywhere in the Muslim world. I'm against foreign intervention, invasion, and occupation of Arab and Muslim countries, anywhere in those Muslim countries. I'm for the unity of the Ummah, one God, one Islam, one Quran. And let's keep the foreign colonial powers out of Arab and Muslim affairs. That's my view, Ahmad. What's yours?
Yes, can you hear me, Mr. George? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, and I hope you heard me, and I hope you're going to answer me.
Yeah, I'm answering you. What do you think when the Iranian leaders, Rafsanjani and Khamenei and Khatami, they said, we help American to invade Iraq?
No, Iran did not help America to invade Iraq. Iran has supported the resistance to American and British occupation of Iraq from the first day.
No, go back.
Just Google it. Just Google it. You'll see Iran accused of arming, of financing virtually every faction that was resisting the foreign invasion and occupation of Iraq. But your hatred of Iran is blinding you, and of course its origin may very well lie in a sectarian basis. Your hatred of Iran is blinding you from this central truth, that America and Britain and Israel, who were responsible for the destruction of Iraq, are now destroying Syria. Can't you see that? Are you so blinded by sectarian hatred that you can't see that the very same countries that destroyed Iraq are now destroying Syria? And will destroy all Arab and Muslim countries if they can, and if they can fool enough Muslims like you to go along with them. Sorry, I just got angry there. Tony's on the line. He's in London, wants to talk about Israel. Tony, welcome.
George, long time. How are you?
Nice to hear your voice again,
yeah,
Tony.
Nice
go
to hear
on.
Your voice. Keep the good work, George. Man, we admire. I wish I could carry a shoulder high, passing all the cities, major cities of the world, for the moral stand that you take on.
Thank you, Tony. Yeah.
Two points here, George. I'm now informed by many, many historians that the Zionists, at the turn of the Second World War, wanted to hoist the Zionist flag alongside the Nazi flag, but which was turned down, which clearly shows the difference between Judaism and Zionism, men of whom are professed atheists, may I add. Question number two, George. Many American taxpayers now regard Israel as a parasite on the U.S. economy. In fact, an American I recently spoke to described Israel as a hemorrhage on the U.S. Economy. And now some 40 to 50% of the United States citizens want to stop all further aid to Israel because they see who is causing all this trouble in the Middle East. It is Zionist Israel. And, of course, these Arab family dynasties. They are the culprits, George. What do you think, George?
Well, certainly more than 50% of United States citizens polled regularly by Zogby indicate that they think their country is either too close or far too close to Israel. And I think there is a dawning realization, even in the White House, even in the latest appointments by the President Obama, that the orientation of US policy towards Israel and supporting absolutely everything that Israel does, giving them $3 billion a year, $3 billion for a country of 6 million people, 6.7 million people at the last count. And that's before you start counting the private Zionist philanthropy from the United States to Israel, then the number climbs to way over $5.5 billion a year. There are more and more American people who think that that is money they can't afford, and moreover, it's investing in a state, a little settler state, which is a major problem for the United States in geopolitical terms, making people all over the world hate the United States for Israel's crimes already committed and some under consideration actively in relation to Iran, for example. And very recently, Israel attacked and bombed Syria as a part of the Free Syrian Army, bombing the targets that the Free Syrian Army, which, like the Holy Roman Empire, which was neither Holy Roman nor an empire, is neither free nor Syrian, nor even an army. It certainly has no air force, but it has the Israeli air force bombing targets on its behalf. All of this is a big problem for the people of the United States and the people of Britain, I may say, because our orientation towards Israel, in support of Israel, and our original sin in the creation of Israel with the Balfour Declaration is a major reason for hatred against us throughout the Muslim world. So it is indeed a hemorrhage. It is indeed a parasite. But most importantly of all, it is historically doomed, because the change that's going on in the Arab world means that the idea of a racist, exclusivist, apartheid state of 6 million people, 6.7 million people, amidst 350 million Arab people, is historically doomed. However many weapons they have, however many dollars the United States sends them. Tony, good to hear from you again. Frank is on the line from Ghana in Africa, wants to talk about the UK and Syria. Frank, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on
Hello?
The air.
Yeah. Good evening. Hello?
Yes. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, Frank.
I would like to talk about the Syria issue.
Yeah.
And I'm highly disappointed in the United States and UK and the so-called Al-Qaeda for whatever is happening in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we should all cast our mind back, look at what happened in Libya, what happened in Tunisia, what happened in they attempted to destroy Tehran, but they couldn't. Going to Tuala, and they are not doing it in Syria. And one thing I've noticed about this interior is that they don't have anything good for we Africans and then the Arabs. So the time has come for us to get to sit up and also think what is good for us. We should read our Bible and Quran very well, because our strength and our life is all right. Because whatever they will do, it's really comes against us. Because look at the way the world economy is. They've made the world like a vehicle whereby they hold the fear, and whatever they want it to come is what that's what happened.
Well, look, the only one I'll take issue with you on is Tunisia. You see, Tunisia was a perfect example of a real revolution, where the Tunisian people as a whole rose up and overthrew their Western-sponsored, armed and financed dictatorship. They didn't ask anybody else to invade them. They didn't ask anyone else to bomb them. They won't let anyone else come and occupy them. They didn't bring Al-Qaeda from around the world in order to do it. It was an almost perfect popular revolution which succeeded in overthrowing their dictatorship. Ditto in Egypt. But I'm afraid the others don't qualify on my definitions of real revolutions. Frank in Ghana, thanks. Elijah's on the line in Italy on the same subject. Elijah, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George.
Go ahead, brother.
Thank you for what you have been doing.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to speak about our Syria problem.
Yeah.
The situation that is happening in Syria today now is getting to an extent that the world cannot stop, because I've been seeing things in the media and the television and all, seeing what the British people have been doing, the France and the Americans. They try to destroy the Middle East and what they did to Gaddafi. I was once in Libya before I crossed over to Italy. We saw all the things they have been doing, because these people have been trying to destroy the world. These are the people selling ammunitions to the Middle East to fight each other. They don't sell the ammunition to their own self to destroy their own city and their own land. Why are they doing all this? This is the time for the Middle East people to unite together, to wake up and stand as one to fight against these people. They try to destroy this world. These are the hypocrites. These are the destroyers, the demons of the earth who are trying to destroy us. We have seen them.
Well, look, there you are, Elijah in Italy. Not a clear line, but a very, very clear message. He's one of the Africans who had to flee for their lives from the liberated territory of Libya, because their faces were too black also, and some of them ended up hanging from trees. Strange fruit indeed in the harvest of so-called democracy. Syed is on the line from London, wants to talk about the same subject. No, we've just lost him. So let me recap the subjects that we are dealing with this evening. Prince Charles blundered into troubled waters in Jordan this week. He drove past the Palestinian refugees, which Britain has a primary responsibility for, and who have been there for six decades, and visited the Syrian refugee camps. Him and the Duchess of Cornwall, I think, is her fiefdom. Thus signifying the British royal imprimatur by appointment to His Royal Highness to the Syrian jihad. At least that's my interpretation. You may have a different one. Jonathan is on the line from Birmingham in England about Syria. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hello, good evening, Galloway.
Good evening, Jonathan. Go ahead.
Right. Thank you a lot for your comment and everything.
Thanks.
But I do very much appreciate all what you've been doing just to let the people who are asleep to know what is happening.
Thank you.
My question is, are the Arabs Muslims or just any other people? They should try to stop the hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is too much in the Arab world. Today, this one isn't a Muslim. Today, this one isn't a Muslim. This one isn't a Muslim. Who then is a Muslim? Saudi Arabia, we know, we respect you for two or three things, for the Kaaba, the Quran, and the language. Look at what you are doing. Why can't you be God-fearing people? Let there be peace. Let Islam be Islam. Let there be peace in Israel. Let there be peace in Syria. Look at what is happening in Syria. Poor and innocent people, children, are dying. England is saying nothing. They kill someone, is being killed by a drone. No one says anything. When they kill, when a man uses a gun to kill a New Yorker, the whole world must hear of it. What of double standard?
Please, well, double standards, Jonathan. Double standards is the name of the game. It's the middle name of the so-called democracies, which are really hypocrisies. And it's time that people woke up to the true facts. And that's what Press TV is trying to do, to report the truth to the people, to be a voice for voiceless people. And I'm glad you've joined us tonight, Jonathan, and become one of them. Jama is on the line, all the way from Somalia, wants to talk about Israel and the Eritrean situation. Jama, go ahead.
Yes, Master Jonathan, thank you.
Welcome, go ahead.
Thank you. I wanted to talk about Eritrea and Israel. You know, Eritrea is one of the, I can say, is one of the diseases in Africa. You know, they are doing something wrong in, I'm in Somalia at the moment. Now they are doing something related. They are giving weapons for the extremists, and you know they are working with Israel. That they need Somalia to be a heaven and a bad place. So I wanted to say, and I wanted to, Israel. I wanted to say Eritrea is working with Israel, and Israel, they proposed that the UN, United Nations Security Council, to stop the embargo of weapons. And 2 weeks ago, the United Nations, they stopped, they lifted the embargo. So now, the Eritreans and the Israelis are planning to send the weapons to Somalia. Then the extremists, such as Shabab, such as Al Qaeda, they need to kill the Somali people. So that was my comment. And you know, George Kellaway, you are one of the people who always standing to unite Muslims. So what can we do for this situation against the Israelis and against the Eritreans?
Let me say something first before agreeing with you in general that I should have said in relation to the last question from Birmingham. It's important to place responsibility where it properly lies. But, you know, the Muslims don't actually need the British and the Americans to divide them. In Pakistan, where I was recently, homegrown Pakistani Muslims calling themselves the Taliban were destroying the lives and murdering hundreds of people for no other reason than that there is a marginal difference in their interpretation of Islam from one to the other. So, of course, these Western countries are busy in these crimes, but the real responsibility lies amongst the Ummah itself. That's the truth of it, Jama. Melancholy though it is. Let's squeeze in one last call from Amin in France. Amin, welcome. Go ahead quickly.
Okay, salam alaikum. I just want to say that Mr. Cameron seems to long for those sadistic, brutal accounts of torture of innocent civilians in Iraq. It's not enough for him that Syria's infrastructure is demolished, that millions have been displaced, that the sectarian violence isn't as violent as he wants it to be. He calls this inaction. If he wants some action, he should go to the movies. Such a wicked creature. I mean, how sadistic one can be. And I'd like to tell him that if he's really into action movies, how about some action in Palestine? But we all know
Amin.
He surely won't like the
ending. Amin! To Amin from France. The best call of the evening. Unfortunately, it had to be the last one. God willing, I'll be back again next week with more comment. Till then, go in peace.
Hello, just comment your name and the place you left that number. And just make sure the site your television volume set up to zero.
Zero. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You'll be directly put through this. Your phone number.